I stumbled upon today's case in much the same way as I have any other. By accident. By something I've randomly seen or been directed to. But the focus of today's episode came from the most innocuous of places, because I stumbled upon the Raglan bus crash while walking my dog. I was in Aberdare Park, a beautiful location settled in the town of Aberdare in the Cannon Valley, when I walked past a bench. It wasn't a new bench, and it was one that I'd walked past numerous times over the decades I visited there. But for some reason, on this particular day, it really captured my attention. I'd recently read about an interesting murder that had happened in the same park in 1948, one about which there will be a future episode. And I briefly wondered if that was what the bench was dedicated to. It wasn't, and instead it was dedicated to the victims and survivors of the Raglan bus crash. Taking place in 1995 in South Wales, the crash resulted in the deaths of 10 people, with a further 30 being injured. In today's episode, we're telling the story of the Raglan bus crash and how it was allowed to happen. It was the 4th of July 1995, on what should have been the height of the summer season, the perfect time for a coach party outing. The weather was beautiful. It was a sunny, dry day, the rare kind if you live in South Wales. The bus left Aberdare that morning and was travelling to Stratford-upon-Avon for a day of sightseeing in Shakespeare's County. A witness to the accident told the police that he believed the bus had been travelling at a speed on approach to the roundabout, and that the driver appeared to have lost control. One witness, Stephen Smith from Blackheath, the West Midlands, reported to The Independent that, quote, "The coach looked to be going pretty quickly when it approached the roundabout. I saw it hit the curb and start to go over on its side. I lost sight of it when it ploughed into the trees on the roundabout. Then there was a bang and a cloud of dust," end quote. The bus itself had landed on its side, with trees which were planted on the roundabout breaching the confines of the bus. Nigel Watkins, also a witness, told the Herald that, quote, "The coach had tipped over into the trees and they had all gone through the side of the coach, trapping the passengers. Others were in a really bad way and they were trapped by the trees inside the coach," end quote. The police would later explain that the bus had landed on its side before spinning in the opposite direction. In media coverage following the incident, police would report that the bus had actually been involved in a minor collision prior to the accident. But this initial collision wasn't believed to have contributed to the accident on the roundabout near Raglan Castle. Those who assisted with the rescue efforts would later recount the horrific scenes that confronted them as they attempted to assist the victims, many of whom were screaming from inside the wreckage. One of the first witnesses on the scene was pensioner George Ploughman of Fairfax Raglan. He told the Herald that, quote, "I heard a loud bang and rushed from my garden. I was joined by men from the roadwork site and we tried to comfort the passengers as best we could. The coach driver was lying on the ground, totally shell-shocked. Many others were laying around him, covered in blood." Another witness, John Crump, told The Independent that, quote, "It didn't look like a coach," end quote. Another witness, Corporal Matty Hall, an instructor with part of the Royal Engineers who was driving at the time of the accident, also reported the tragic scene, quote, "We tried to help those trapped, but some died as we looked on. Others were walking over bodies to try and get out, while others were so shocked they didn't move," end quote. In the wake of the incident, nine of the Army's apprentices who were with Corporal Hall were to be praised for the considerable effort they exerted in helping the injured. They, along with three of their instructors, assisted in pulling some of the injured from the vehicle. One of the instructors, Corporal Chris Collette, told the Herald that, quote, "There were people obviously dead in the wreckage and others walking around badly injured or dazed. I did what I could to organise what help was around. All the apprentices performed magnificently. They are on a 2-week leadership course but obviously did not expect to be confronted with anything like this. We tried to keep them away from the worst of the mayhem, but we shall be keeping a close eye on them after this trauma. End quote. It took the firefighters roughly 2 hours to cut the injured free, and the air ambulance also attended the scene. The passengers who were walking wounded assisted with medical effort, and there are several images of them assisting the gravely injured. In total, 25 passengers were cut free by firefighter specialist equipment, with the most seriously injured being flown to hospital by helicopter, while a fleet of 21 ambulances dealt with the remaining casualties. In total, 8 died at the scene. 32 were taken to hospital, including the driver, and a further 2 were to die later. The driver's name was Mr. Crisp. He was 30 years old and had been a coach driver for 6 years. However, this was his first week of working for Lewis's Coaches, a local business based in Aberdare, South Wales. The vehicle he was driving was 7 years old, and amongst the passengers were Mr. Crisp's wife and his 2-year-old son. They both survived the accident. The driver himself was said to have been mildly injured, with shock said to have been the ailment for which he required the most treatment. Many of the passengers were from St. David's Day Centre in Aberdare, an institution that assists those who have been released from psychiatric care or those that are still undertaking treatment. A number of staff from that institution were also in attendance, along with some of their relatives. The remaining passengers were made up of people from other daycares or old people's homes within the valley. For that reason, the ages of the passengers varied greatly, with the youngest said to have been 2 and the oldest over 70. Other than the wide array of ages, very little else is known about the victims. What we do know is that no children were killed and that there were 8 women and 2 men. Of these 10, 2 were social workers. The social workers were named publicly as Derek Broadstock, who was 44, and Christine Extens, who was 45. Both worked for the Mid Glamorgan County Council and were working with passengers on the bus. The bus involved in the accident feels prehistoric by today's standards, as it wasn't even fitted with seatbelts, a basic safety feature that most of us now take for granted. In fact, it wasn't until 2001, 6 years after the crash, that compulsory seatbelts became the law. As a result of a contemporary lax regard for safety, a number of those who died were thrown through the windows, many of them crushed as the bus rolled over them. The Raglan bus disaster came in the wake of several other similar incidents, and safety campaigners added it to their ever-growing list of reasons why they were fighting for reform. Just one day before the Raglan bus crash, 75 people had been injured in North Wales when 2 coaches had collided on the M3. In this incident, 13 members of the Royal British Legion were killed. The Raglan bus crash further strengthened the arguments of those who were pushing for safety reform. Campaigners were seeking to ensure that seatbelts were made compulsory on coaches, but also that the roofs on such vehicles were reinforced. The Consumers Association said, quote, "The tragedy today is yet another example of why life-saving seatbelts must be fitted urgently in coaches and minibuses." End quote. The Conservative government of the time said that seatbelts for coaches carrying children would be introduced in 1996, but the legislation to insist on them in all such vehicles would have to await agreement by the European Union. At this point, I could probably take a guess at what it is that you're thinking, because from what we outlined at the beginning of the episode, it does sound as if there might have been some culpability on the part of the driver. After all, the seatbelt situation was out of his control, but it was also reported that the bus had approached the roundabout at speed. The police seemed to agree, as Mr. Cripp was eventually to be tried for the Raglan bus crash. But he wasn't the only one. In the weeks following the crash, a number of concerns were identified, and in the end, both driver and coach owner were seen as responsible. The police charged Philip Crisp with dangerous driving, suggesting that he'd approached the roundabout too fast and that he'd failed to change gears correctly. Crisp's defence was the exact reason why the coach owner, Ronald Lewis, was fined, as Crisp claimed the brakes had failed on the bus. The police must have found evidence to suggest that this part of the story at least was true, as Ronald Lewis was fined £750 for operating a vehicle with defective brakes, a faulty speed limit, and 2 tachograph offences. However, despite this, they still charged Philip Crisp, suggesting that aside from the brakes failing, he had still approached the roundabout too quickly. The jury didn't agree, and on the 22nd of May 1997, Philip Crisp was found not guilty of all charges. In the wake of the disaster, a local festival was cancelled, and a fund was established to assist the survivors. Additionally, a survivors group was created. For the survivors, the battle was only just beginning, because in 1999 the BBC reported that the survivors were still awaiting their compensation. Those who did survive were left with several serious injuries, and some suffered with the mental effects of what they'd experienced. One of the survivors, Pearl Williamson, spoke to the BBC about the fight for compensation. She had suffered from spine and rib fractures and had recently lost the sight in one of her eyes temporarily because of the accident. At the time, she was offered £35,000 and had received the money, but many others were still awaiting theirs. The BBC also reported that the survivors still sought support from each other and that twice a month they met to discuss the challenges they were facing. The final footnote in this story returns to the bench where my episode began. In 2015, Wales Online reported that survivors had been left angry after it was realised that the bench had been damaged by vandals. In this article, it was revealed that Aberdare Park had been chosen as the location for the memorial bench because of its peaceful and beautiful surrounding. It's also the town from which the bus had set off. It's designed to be a place of poignant reflection and peace, but just before the 20th anniversary of the crash, the plaques on the bench needed to be renewed. This was because of graffiti that vandals had left on the original. In an article for Wales Online, Joanna Williamson-Price, one of the survivors, recounted her disappointment, revealing that it wasn't the first time that such an act had been committed. She told the publication that the tree which sits inside the square bench had also had to be replaced due to a significant amount of damage that was done to it. Then, in 2010, the plaques were stolen. Joanna herself was only 17 when the incident happened, but she'd been on the bus with her mum who was disabled. The bench, however, is not the only memorial, and a second plaque also sits inside of Aberdare Library. This one lists the name of the victims and was accompanied by a remembrance book at the time it was erected. At the time that Wales Online reported the latest damage to the memorial bench, the council had pledged to replace the damaged plaques. Based on the fact that there were fresh plaques on the bench when I saw it recently, it seems that the council did follow through with this promise. The Raglan bus crash was a tragedy that helps reiterate the importance of health and safety measures. What sometimes feels like a restriction or red tape can often be what saves a life. Having sat there researching this article for a few hours, it's fair to say that I will never forget what I've learned. And next time I visit the park, which will likely be tomorrow because it's my dog's favourite and he decides where we go, I'll spare a thought for the bench I always overlooked. But specifically, for those whose lives were taken and the families that were left behind.